regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I cannot believe it's only Wednesday. This seems like the longest week. Is it just me, or do you feel that way too? Anyway, we've got a great show coming up today. We're going to be talking with Nolan Howard from 617 Defense in Massachusetts. Nolan was on the program a few weeks ago talking about the rise in gun ownership and the interest in gun ownership among black residents in Massachusetts, a group that has been disproportionately impacted by Massachusetts gun control laws. And now we've got this huge new bill that has been approved by the House and the Senate with all kinds of changes to the state's licensing laws. So we've talked with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League, but Nolan actually reached out to me and said, hey, this is a really bad bill. Nolan has several other firearms instructors who want to talk about this as well. So I think this is actually the most guests we've ever had on a Cam and Company in one segment. Back when we were doing the three-hour show, we would have generally six guests per show, but not generally half a dozen guests per segment. So it might be a little more chaotic than normal. I'm going to ask folks to say their name when they are talking, so you know who's actually responding here if you're listening to this on the podcast. But I think it's going to be a great conversation. Unfortunately, not about a great topic. Again, the continued infringement on our right to keep and bear arms in Massachusetts. We'll get to that in just one second. Before we do, though, let's talk about this. Economists are warning us that massive tax hikes could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. If you have not thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market's golden. Text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That's text GOLDEN to 800-405-GOLD. And now, let's kick off our conversation with some of the folks who are going to be most strongly impacted by these changes to gun laws, firearms instructors, as well as their students. Again, it's a great conversation with Nolan Howard and his friends. Take a look and a listen. Well, again, thanks to each and every one of you for joining me on the program today. Let's just kind of get started by, I feel like I'm in kindergarten. Let's just go around the room and introduce ourselves. We don't have to like name our favorite pet or anything like that, but if you don't mind, and Nolan, we'll just start with you. If you just want to give us your name and maybe the name of your organization or your company.
Sure. I'm Nolan Howard, a firearm instructor for 617 Defense, my own company here in Boston. I teach home firearm safety and stop the bleed instructor.
All right. Antonio?
My name is Antonio Miles. I am a full-time firearm instructor. I do stop the bleed. I do basic pistol, and the name of my company is Urban Shooting Experience. Also, I'm the vice president of NAGA Massachusetts, National African American Gun Association.
All right. And Davin, how about you?
My name is Davin Dawkins. I run Dawkins Training Solutions. We do all kind of pistol fundamentals. The Massachusetts Firearm Safety Course, Stop the Bleed, CPR, AED and First Aid, use of force, de-escalation simulators, and we run a lot of private lessons for those individuals that want to become more proficient with their firearms training outside of a classroom setting.
That's awesome. And we also had Doncor from the donfirearms.com with us. I don't know if Doncor is going to be able to hop back on, but hopefully we'll see him again in just a minute. But again, I want to thank each of you for coming on the program here, because this is a topic that obviously is of great concern to Massachusetts gun owners and firearms instructors like yourself, but this is something that gun owners around the country need to be aware of. I mean, I think this is sort of an experiment to see just how far the anti-gunners can go. So I'll start with you, Nolan. Have you had a chance to look at this bill? Because I've looked at the Gun Owners Action League summary, and it is just It is. It's massive.
It's asinine. It's atrocious. It's like you're basically making all law for gun owners like almost felon. All the language, it's like Mitt Representative Day, you know, promised us and he lied on our face. Like you basically can't carry anywhere. I don't even know how people are going to get certain, you know, requirements and done, you know, things done. Especially for the training, for the new curriculum, you know, just from reading that alone, make you take the class, take a written exam, and then do a psych ward, you know, a psych evaluation, which is like kind of, you know, asking too way too much and, you know, going over a little bit too much, kind of reaching into like the HIPAA violation area. It's astonishing. That's all.
And Doncor, I'm glad to see that that you're with us again, sir. And let me ask you, you know, Nolan has talked about this psych evaluation, which I didn't even realize was a part of the new training mandates. I know that there is there's also a live fire mandate, right? So all of this training now has to also go to a range. That's a change under Massachusetts law when it comes to getting your license to carry, is it not?
To my knowledge, yes. Previously, Massachusetts did not require it. There were cities like Weymouth and Quincy that their police department would call instructors, especially myself, to check to make sure that students did actually do the live fire portion.
Okay. And so, Antonio, what kind of challenges do you think this law is going to pose for firearms instructors and your students going forward?
So they don't even have the curriculum for instructors to instruct. However, it's the new mandate, and it's just going to already slow down a slow process for residents of Boston, especially to get their license to defend themselves. It's de-arming our community.
You know, when you talk about the process, how long does it take? Davin, if you know the answer to this, great. Otherwise, I'll just open it up to the floor here. But how long does it typically take for one of your students to get a LTC application approved once they've gone through your course? Is it a matter of days, weeks, months?
No, technically by law, it's written as it should take no more than 40 days, but towns and municipalities don't follow that law as it's written. So I know a couple of my students that I have that live in Boston. It literally took them a year process from start to finish. And then I have students that, you know, live outside of Boston where they got their license in like 2 months. So I think it's really a lot of the towns and municipalities that are dragging their feet on A, trying to deter you from actually following up with the process in hopes of just, you know, that individual thinks that it's taking way too long, so I'm just going to give up and not follow along with the process. Or they're just trying to pretty much do what this bill is doing and just stop people from getting their license all in general. I really wish it could be faster because there's a huge training gap from the time that a student takes the class or the time they get their license. You know, everything that they pretty much learned in that class is they forget it because of that lapse within the amount of time it takes to get a license. And I wish there was a way that we can speed this up because I don't think it's fair to the students that put the time in to sit down and take away time from their family or work to take this class. And then they have to sit here for 7 to 8 months waiting for a license to come in the mail. And with this new bill, I can only see it's going to take longer. If it takes you 6 to 8 months to process a license with no additional training and psych eval, I can only see how long it's going to take for you to process a student that has to A, do a live fire portion, psych eval, wait for the state to issue the certificate, and then the town has to therefore verify that the state police issued that certificate. So I can see this process taking a year and a half. And they're just going to drag their feet because the police are already short-staffed as it is. So how can they keep up with the demand of people that are constantly applying to get licenses?
Right.
When you can't keep up with the demand of just having enough cops on the city streets to stop inner city violence.
Yeah. And this is something that the Gun Owners actually has noted in their summary that, you know, a lot of these things are unfunded mandates, right? So they're saying, okay, you got to do these things. You got to put these new aspects of training in place. We're going to add more work to these police departments, but we're not going to give them any more money to hire any additional staff. So I'll just open this up to anybody who wants to answer. I mean, do you think that that is by design to chill the exercise of the right to keep in their arms, as Davin said, to persuade people, hey, you know what? It's not worth the trouble. It's not worth the bother. It's not worth the hassle of doing all of this stuff just to exercise your Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, I think so. I think they did it by design, you know, to deter people away from their, you know, God-given right. Unfortunately, it's a shame. We're becoming like a communist state. It's still mind blowing. You know, I got people. I've talked to people in group chats asking questions. Well, what about this? You know, for the pre-ban date, like of you know the original September 4th, 1994 one till now the July 2016, and now the new August 1st, 2024. There's so much confusion. People are going back and forth, don't really know. And it's just, it's causing mayhem and confusion. People are getting, you know, some people are getting frustrated and deteriorated. So it's, I think they did on purpose.
I definitely agree with that. I think in previous years with the Class B restrictions, that was a way to ultimately restrict, you know, law-abiding citizens from being able to, you know, utilize their Second Amendment rights. Now the concern is instead of a Class B restriction, the pieces that concern me are going to be the written test. So it says here that the state police is going to be able to, you know, create and implement a written version of the test, which basically sounds like a basic pistol course, which is fine. But when you begin to mandate these things, the question that I have is who grades them and how much longer, to Dawkins' point, is that going to prolong the process? I know for cities like Boston and Brookline, where there were shooting calls, there were, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people who are law-abiding citizens, but because they didn't have time or money to be able to get practice in for that shooting qual, they were basically disqualified on the ability to exercise their right.
I mean, and this is something that Jim Wallace has talked about with me before, that Massachusetts does not have a lot of, first of all, they have got no state-run ranges, right? So all of the ranges in Massachusetts are privately owned. And there are really only a handful that are generally open to the public. So if every applicant is going to have to go through live fire training, Antonio, I mean, are you worried about a bottleneck where, you know, you've got a lot of people who are applying and there's nowhere for them or few places for them to go and actually get this training that's mandated?
I say that anyone who lives in Massachusetts should do what I did and just move to New Hampshire. Hit Massachusetts in the pockets, and leave. The rest of my family, I grew up in Roxbury, so all of my family, for the most part, still in Mass. And so it's my demographic, but it definitely is going to bottleneck the process. Like, just think about it. Like, someone who applies in Roxbury, it takes them maybe 9 months versus someone who lives in Milton. It takes 2 weeks. It's not a just process.
No, it's not. And it's going to be a more expensive process going forward, too. I mean, if you start adding in things like, again, a psych evaluation, which I think is absolutely ridiculous, live fire training, all of a sudden now, you know, we're not talking about an extra $20 to apply, right? We're talking about adding probably another couple of $100 to the process of exercising your rights. And I'm curious. I mean, are you concerned that this is going to essentially price some people out of their rights? A lot of folks, you know, $200, that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money for me. And, you know, if all of a sudden we make this more expensive, it seems to me like the pool of people who are going to be able to exercise their Second Amendment rights, even just from a financial standpoint, shrinks down.
Well, the psyche valve itself is, what's the word? A game, because it's like the psyche valve, it goes against the doctor's license. And so the doctor who's providing the psyche valve is like, well, do I want to stamp yes to this person? And then am I liable if they do something crazy? So it's like, it's madness.
Like I said, it'd be more of a HIPAA violation almost. It's like, if you're a doctor, you'd be like, I'm not losing my license because you all want this. You know, so now you're going to have people like think about their careers, and it's just going to be like, So it's just a mess. It's a mess. And I don't think people who voted, I even heard some Democrats, they didn't even read the whole bill. And I'm like, it's just, they just wrote the summary. I'm like, but then again, they go on the other hand saying, well, they're not for it, but they still said yes, and it still passed. So now it's like you're becoming like a hypocrite. So like, what are you, you know, are you really taking it? I guarantee you most of them read the bill, 116 pages. The answer was like, no.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say the process is a whole other issue, right? I mean, they spent almost a year putting this thing together, from the House bill and then the Senate bill and then the conference committee. And then they come out and they say, all right, we got it done. We're going to vote on it tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And it's 116 pages of, I mean, I've read bills. Malarkey. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, I've read bills that are like, they're so full of like legalese, or they're really hard to understand. This is even worse because it's, every two sentences, it refers back to a previous statute. So you got to look up what that statute is, and then you got to see what the changes are. They did not make it easy to figure out what was in that bill. And then, as you say, they rushed it into law. But you say you're now hearing from some Democrats who said, well, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. Or I wouldn't have voted for it if I knew what was in it.
I mean, from what I've heard from, I talked to some people like, Mike Harris, from Goals and stuff.
Yeah.
I think they just do that stuff on purpose just to rush it and not say, yeah, we're not going to do it. We're just, here you go. Because I think everyone's so uneducated, and especially in politics, I'm not saying all of them, but the majority of them are bastards, just either scared, don't care, or just don't want to deal with it. So they just say, yes, here you go, just to get, say like they did something. And like I said, it's a power struggle. They don't want to lose their seat. So that's another thing. So
Governor Healey has not signed this into law yet, although I'm sure it's coming. Do you think, this again has sort of flown under the radar? I'm curious, has there been any reaction or response that you've seen from potential customers? Are people saying, all right, listen, I want to go and take my course now before all of this nonsense takes effect? Or is this still flying under a lot of folks' radar?
I think it's still flying under a lot of people's radar. I sent out a couple of emails just from a couple of inquiries that I received, just to let them know, and they didn't even know anything about it. They actually appreciated me reaching out with an email, just letting them know what was going on. But if you're not really in the 2A community, then you're kind of like on the fence of getting a license, something that you really don't pay attention to, because you really don't, for one, you can't really understand things in the build, and you're not like a real gun owner, it's not something that you actually pay attention to. But I know once I heard about this bill that it was a process from the first time that it passed, I kind of knew that it was going to be coming down the pipeline at some point, but I didn't think that it was going to, get released the night before it was supposed to get voted on and then actually pass. So with that being said, I think a lot of people, it's definitely flying over their heads. And it's just because it hasn't been publicized like on the news or the way that it should be. It's like, I think it's another way to deter everyone or stop from getting it. We're going to do it while everyone's sleeping. So when it passes and the date one, in the law takes effect, it's going to be too late to even try to attempt to take the class. On the other side, you have individuals that want to get their license, say this, they only have what, maybe the rest of this week and a couple of days of next week before August 1st comes. Now, what if these individuals take this class prior to August 1st, get their paperwork submitted to the municipality? Are they going to be held to this new standard, that psyche vow, that
in that live fire qualification when there's no new curriculum in effect for even the instructor to teach, just because the effective base is A1. And I think that's unfair too, because I take a class before the law goes into effect. I shouldn't be penalized to have to follow standards that weren't even out prior to me taking this class.
That's absolutely right. But I didn't realize that this bill was written in a way that all of this takes effect August the 1st. Next Thursday?
Next Thursday. Yeah. The bill goes into effect next Thursday. But I was under the impression once the governor signs it, it takes 90 days before it can go into effect. But
okay,
I guess they're saying it goes into effect immediately. So I wouldn't be surprised if he signs it next week and just says, you know, the 31st, and then it goes into effect the next day.
I mean, we kind of saw something like that when she was attorney general and she just declared, oh, you know what? We've been looking at this assault weapons statute all wrong. We actually banned all kinds more guns than what's allowed under law and made that effective immediately. So Healy has a history of springing these things on gun owners. But, you know, as you say, there should be a grace period, particularly if they don't have the curriculum established or anything like that, which I guess speaks to the challengeability of this bill in court, you know. And I know that we can't just depend on a good court decision, but it does seem to me like there's a lot of stuff in here that is going to be challenged that should fall. If a judge is willing to take a look honestly and fairly at what these provisions are and apply the text history and tradition test that the Supreme Court laid out in Bruin, because you've got all kinds of new regulations that have no real comparison to, you know, 1700s or 1800s gun laws. I mean, it seems like the state of Massachusetts has really flipped the script and almost, instead of a right to keep and bear arms, it's a wrong to own a gun, but we'll carve out these specific scenarios where some residents will be able to own and carry a firearm.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I want to kind of come back to one of the points that you made earlier about the economic pressures for civilians. In cities like New York, Maryland, D.C., where there are 16-hour requirements, folks out there are paying like $400 just to take the course, just to be eligible to apply, right? And then you look at the pressures that are being put on stores, FFLs, that are now losing 50% of their potential revenue, right? So for store-based instructors that are trying to operate and maintain their stores in order to keep their doors open, to even be able to provide the public with the tools that they want to purchase, you're going to look at, I project seeing an increase in those store-based instructor courses that are going to be missing out on that revenue. And that's just going to put a huge dent on the public and making it more expensive for them to be able to even to take the course, to be eligible to even get the LTC, which I think is just going to further disenfranchise the community altogether.
I think you're right. And, you know, to that end, I mean, we've been talking about the rights aspect of this, but let's talk about the financial aspect of this. How concerned are you guys that it's going to be untenable to continue on as a firearm instructor once these new rules go into place?
Definitely. And take it back and forth. This, and you know what? It's solely going to be based off how the state runs everything. Because I've heard that the state was actually going to be taking over the classes, and I heard it. But you have state police are going to put out curriculum. Now, I just want to go back to the live fire portion. Now, if you're requiring a live fire portion, and I know some states require that you shoot for an hour, 2 hour qualification, where would all these instructors go in order to be able to successfully accomplish this requirement? As far as live fire goes, I know a lot of the private ranges don't allow instructors to go on their property to use ranges, especially to teach courses. And then I know a lot of the public ranges, they will allow you, but they charge you an arm and a leg. I'm saying like some places I talked to, they wanted to charge $100 per person to bring my people.
Where's the profit margin, right? It's like $100 per person. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, and it's reading in the law, trying to people when they do apply for it, they're going to take half that and put it in like in some trust to try to fund this because this bill wasn't funded technically. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to use all that, hoping people can do all that to fund this type of stuff. And I'm like, it's not going to happen. You're going to either have most of us either, God forbid, may be running out of business or hopefully not. But it puts a strain on everybody. Because like I said, what Darwin said, it's for private clubs, you have to get in and be sworn in. And then you just can't use that range as an instructor because you got to take their instructor course and, you know, for what they got to do for that place to let you even get to that point. So it's only like probably six total probably public ranges. But like I said, they don't even have the staff coming for the RSOs. You're going to have it's just
unconstitutional.
Yeah, and it's just going to work. It's not going to stop crime in the urban areas for most of us. You know, for some of us who live there or who got family live there, it's not going to do anything. This is just to complete, you know, just to stop lawful gun owners and us instructors and stop us in our way. So it's just.
I definitely want to follow up with the piece around, you know, lawful urban gun owners. I think one of the things that definitely raised an eyebrow for me on this particular bill is how folks can buy ammunition with EBT cards, but cannot necessarily buy clothes with that same card. So the question becomes, what is the intent with that? Right? Definitely suspicious.
It's very suspicious.
What do you think what are your suspicions regarding that particular provision?
I just if we think about, you know, natural human needs, right? Food, clothing, shelter. And if you cannot buy clothes with an EBT card, which helps to provide you, you know, the basic needs of a human being, then why would they include language in this new bill that will place ammunition into the hands of those who are disenfranchised, right? Particularly in situations where their socioeconomic status may lend them to, I'm trying to use my words correctly, but you know, folks that are in conditions that, you know, may be closer to the line of committing crimes, right? So why would you allow them that access? That piece for me is confusing, you know. Right. Not saying that everyone that is poor somehow is a criminal, but the question becomes like, what? I would like to have a forum with the folks who included that piece in this bill to ask, like, what was your intent or what is your thought behind this?
Yeah, right. It is weird because it's not like, I mean, gun owners actually wasn't even talking to the folks on this bill. They said, we're not supporting anything. We're going to try to help you put lipstick on that pig. So I am curious as to where that provision came from. Who asked for that? Who put that in? And as you say, what was the intent behind it? It is strange, but again, all 116 pages of this thing is just a real mystery as to how this came together. All right, we've only got about 7 minutes left, unfortunately. So I talked with you guys for hours about this, but let me ask you just one final question. We'll just go around. I mean, is there anything we haven't talked about today that you think gun owners need to be aware of when it comes to this bill, either how it's going to impact Massachusetts residents or how this might be exported to other states around the country?
Yeah, I just want to touch on a piece. I think we kind of talked about it. I just want to touch on it real quick, but I think this is going to have a huge impact on, and I just read it this morning, but the bill states that they changed the red flag law. So now substance abuse counselors, physical therapists, and marriage counselors have the right to red flag individuals based on what they feel is necessary. So now you're pretty much having gun owners or people that have LTCs
pick and choose whether, you know, I'm going through something really bad, but I don't want to lose my rights to firearms and I don't want to lose my FTC. So now you're forcing them to bottle their emotions up. And like we say, mental health is a huge issue that's going on worldwide. So now you're really putting people in a situation where, what do I do? And I don't think that's fair. And I don't think they should have a right to just, you know, just because I'm going through some hard times and I might be drinking a little too much, that I lose my rights completely. And they even said, even after the suspension gets lifted, you probably will never get your rights restored, nor will you get your LTC back. So now you have that question of, should I really seek help, even though I really need to, but should I do it and risk the life, risk the getting my firearms and LTC and 2A rights taken away permanently, even if it's a temporary health, if it's a temporary problem that I can get over. But that was a piece that a lot of people that are out there that probably it won't really pay attention to, but I think that's going to play a huge part in this bill too. So I don't know.
I think you're right. I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I think you're spot on. Absolutely. When you talk about this, I mean, I've talked with there's a blanket on her name. She's a retired registered nurse in New York, and she's actually done some research on this very issue of, do red flag laws stop people from getting or seeking treatment, you know, talking to a counselor, talking to a psychiatrist. And according to her research, the answer is absolutely yes. That this does have a chilling effect on people for exactly the reason you talked about, right? You may have somebody who's struggling, but rather than reach out to somebody that's, well, how's that going to impact me? If I open up to somebody, what are they going to do? They're going to turn around and say, well, you should own a gun because I live in an anti-gun state. I don't necessarily trust this person, right? They're the name I found in the phone book. They're the name that my insurance will cover if me talking to them. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to give me a fair shake. So, Devin, I think you're absolutely spot on in raising that concern. Anybody else?
I want to add for couples and not just couples, but for youth as well. If you do need someone to talk to, a friend of mine, Don Core Miners, he has an organization called Who's Got Morale. And so you should check that out if you need someone to talk to. Also, talk to any of us. We're here to help. I know you got a limited time left. Shameless plug for me and Nolan. We have a free Stop the Bleed course coming up at the Easy Pie on August 31st.
Excellent. Nolan, Dr. Ward?
Yeah, I want to close with two questions. I think it's really important for the whole 2A community. And I think about all of the gun buyers that joined our community during, like, I call them the fear mongering eras, whether that was the pandemic or July 2016 or even right now. And how do we get those people to be more active when civil liberties like this are at risk, right? So how do we reshape and rethink about what the average law-abiding American looks like so that they see this as their problem? I think right now we have a whole bunch of people who have become armed, but they don't see this as their problem, and we got to shift that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I would say, just, you know, to add everyone's point, you know, like you said, it's just, you know, we all, everyone, like I said, for new gun owners, you know, contact us. You know, if you don't know where to reach, you know, we'll be more than happy to steer you steer you in the right direction. You know, do your research. You know, just don't listen to, you know, what you hear in the media. Ask people who are in the community. You know, we're not here to, like, deter you or nothing. You know, get the answers that you're looking for instead of hearing from a friend or, you know, or former students. You know, ask us. Like me and Tony said, look, don't make this your only class. Take other classes, you know, educate yourself, you know, and then try to, like you said, with Don Quest, try to get active and to communicate and tell me, hey, this is your right. You know, this is just not it's a one and done thing. You know, we all got to be active also in local politics. I should say to add to that. If you're not active in local politics, this is exactly what will happen every single time.
Yeah.
You know, not just the big governor, who's the governor, who's the president, because they don't, the president doesn't take care of, you know, Massachusetts. It is your governor, it is your mayor, it is your board of selectmen, it is your, the sheriff, the list goes on and on. Those are the ones who write and regulate your laws. So I think a lot of us need to be more active in local politics and not be on the sidelines and complain with, you know, within our camps, and just really go out there on a limb and just really educate the people.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, guys, unfortunately, I got to leave it there because we have less than a minute left here on my free Zoom call. So thank you all for coming on the show today. It was fantastic getting a chance to meet you. And now that I've got your email addresses, don't be surprised if you hear from me in the future asking you to come back on the show. So thank you for everything you're doing there in Massachusetts, helping folks get trained, be responsible, fight the good fight so that we get at this point, it's not even keeping a hold of the right to keep your arms. It's about getting those rights back in Massachusetts. But I appreciate everything you guys are doing to that end. And thanks again for coming on the show today. It was great talk with you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, my thanks again to Nolan and Davin and Antonio and Doncor, all for joining me on the program. And I hope you found that conversation to be as enlightening as I did. Again, I'm still learning about stuff that's in this Massachusetts gun control bill. But it is enough to know that it is absolutely awful, and it is going to have a huge impact, not just on existing gun owners in the state of Massachusetts, but those, again, in the future who might try to decide to exercise the right to keep your arms. And I agree with those instructors. I think that is by design. This is not about addressing violent crime. This is not about stopping violent criminals. This is about preventing people from exercising a fundamental civil right. And unfortunately, it is coming in Massachusetts. All right, before we get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It is the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives that are leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Now, they tirelessly seek out financial experts, including the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, and especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. That's why Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report that highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money heading into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and you can get it absolutely free when you text the word ideas to 76626 to claim your copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text ideas to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 election protection report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think we can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text ideas to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, let's turn now to our armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there. Not necessarily a true recidivist report, but again, still a what the heck are they thinking sentence. Champaign, Illinois man sentenced to probation for robbing a Subway restaurant in Savoy, Illinois. Champaign County Judge Matt Lee handed down the 4 years of probation as the sentence on Monday. 22-year-old Devontae Derrickson ended up pleading guilty but mentally ill back in May to the charge of aggravated robbery. And in exchange for the negotiated plea, prosecutor said, all right, we're going to cap our sentencing recommendation to no more than 6 years in prison. And we will also dismiss the charges of aggravated robbery while indicating armed with a firearm. So prosecutors still were trying to get some prison time, but the judge didn't go along with that. Now, police were dispatched to this Subway into Savoy after a report of a robbery on September 21st of last year. An employee told police that a man wearing a mask and gloves entered the store, indicated that he was armed with a gun, and asked for all the money in the register. Before the man left, he reportedly told the clerk that she should follow up on social media and that he loved her. Yeah, detectives with the Champaign County Sheriff's Office used automated license plate readers to identify the car, which led them to an address where Derrickson was staying. After they obtained a search warrant, they found an airsoft gun, clothes, shoes, and a mask consistent with what the robber was wearing when he was captured on surveillance video entering the Subway. Derrickson was taken into custody about a week after the robbery took place. Assistant State's Attorney Dan Reynolds told the News Gazette newspaper on Monday that he initially intended to argue that Derrickson should be sentenced to 6 years in prison, but he changed his recommendation to 4 years after reading the defendant's interview with a probation officer in a pre-sentence report where Derrickson talked about his childhood adversity. I was homeless for 6 months leading up to the robbery. He took responsibility for doing drugs. It ultimately exacerbated what he described as paranoid delusions. Public defender asking for, again, nothing more than probation, added that her client was kicked out of the home, first made homeless at age 17. At age 22, he has a three-year-old child, no prior criminal history, and is now sober with a treatment plan for his diagnosed mental health disorder. Derrickson said, "I'm grateful for my mistakes, for it has taught me how to become the man I am today." The judge noted that the robbery was a serious offense with the potential to traumatize that store employee. And although a forensic psychiatrist determined that Derrickson could appreciate and understand the criminality of his actions, the judge said it was clear that the defendant's actions were influenced by mental disorder that was distorting what was real. He said that Derrickson's appearance seems to be sincere in wanting to change, that the sentence of probation was a chance to prove the court right after he undergoes a mental health and substance abuse evaluation and complies with all treatment recommendations. So again, instead of 4 to 6 years in prison for aggravated robbery, Derrickson gets probation. Now, I understand the rationale. I don't necessarily agree with the rationale that the judge used. There are a lot of folks, again, who grow up in absolutely horrendous circumstances who do not go on to commit these types of crimes. If Derrickson was, in fact, deemed guilty but mentally ill, one has to wonder why he was given probation and was not confined to a mental health facility until doctors concluded that he had actually wrestled and addressed and overcome these issues. But that's Illinois for you, right? Once the diagnosis is made, there's a deal on the table, that individual is quickly returned to the streets. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from Baltimore, Maryland, where a shooting of a church burglar has been deemed justified. The suspect in this case charged with the crimes related to that burglary, but the individual who shot the burglar not facing any charges at all. Hoodline's Emily White reports that authorities have confirmed the May 26 shooting of a 59-year-old man during a burglary at a Southwest Baltimore church was justified. WMAR in Baltimore reporting that the police investigators concluded that the individual identified as a man named Norris Palmore was shot by the church's pastor while he was breaking into the Praise Cathedral, which is reportedly undergoing construction. When officers and medics arrived at the scene of the church, they found Palmore with gunshot wounds that were deemed non-life-threatening, took him to the hospital. Fox Baltimore reports that the police revealed that there were several unlawful incidents there committed by the suspect in this case, but not by the church pastor. Palmore has been charged with second-degree assault, fourth-degree burglary, attempted theft, malicious destruction of property. And according to Fox Baltimore, he's also no stranger to the criminal justice system. He has a record that dates back to 1995 that includes drug offenses, burglary, as well as a sex offense. His trial is slated to begin on July the 30th. Don't be surprised if we get news of a plea deal before that trial begins. And finally today, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, some neighbors in Iowa who came together to help save a man after he drove his car into a pond in the midnight hours, hard to see. Don't know the circumstances of this. Don't know if there was any inebriation on the part of the driver. This was just didn't know where he was and ended up in the middle of a pond. But Cedar Falls Public Safety says a homeowner called 911 after midnight, just a few hours today. So, early Wednesday morning, reporting that a car had driven into a private pond near their home. Caller said they could see movement inside the car as it was sinking. Public safety officers got to the scene, but neighbors were already there using a small boat to get to the car situated in that pond. The driver and the only occupant of the vehicle, a 58-year-old man who does live in the area, he was rescued from the car, taken to the hospital. Cedar Falls Public Safety says several neighbors acted heroically while assisting in that water rescue. They say the incident is under investigation and the car will be removed from the pond at some point today. Thankfully, again, the driver unharmed because of the quick thinking of those neighbors who came to his aid in the middle of the night there in Cedar Falls, Iowa. So in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank these anonymous Good Samaritans for their very good deed. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. We're going to be talking with Larry Keene from the National Shooting Sports Foundation about the presumptive candidacy of Kamala Harris and maybe her anti-gun running mate, Mark Kelly. He is rumored to be on the short list of Kamala Harris's vice presidential picks. That would make, I mean, Biden-Harris is already, I think, the most anti-gun ticket in history, but this would up the ante quite a bit to have the co-founder of a major gun control group as the number two person on the Democratic ticket. So we'll be talking about that and more with Larry Keene on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. In the meantime, check out the website throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation, including a federal judge's decision to allow New Mexico's waiting period to be enforced after completely disregarding the Supreme Court's text, history, and tradition test. We've got more for you at BearingArms.com, so be sure to check it out. And we'll see you back here tomorrow again for another edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.